Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how the companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them, the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. So without further ado, let's get to today's episode. Kieran Mulligan is an Irish entrepreneur best known as the co-founder and former managing director of Blue Insurance and now the founder of Yes Insurance. Over more than two decades, he's become one of Ireland's most recognisable figures in the niche insurance sector. In 2003, Mulligan co-founded Blue Insurance alongside Rowan Devereaux. Initially focused on travel insurance, the company quickly expanded into specialist products. Under his leadership, Blue Insurance became one of Ireland's leading online insurance brokers and developed strong operations in both Ireland and the UK. It introduced several first-to-the-market offerings, including two-year car and home insurance policies and low-cost annual monthly trip insurance, travel insurance. The company embraced digital sales early, with the majority of policies sold online at the time, when much of the insurance industry still relied heavily on traditional brokers and phone sales. In 2026, he returned to the insurance market with the launch of Yes Insurance. The new company initially focused on travel insurance and specialist niche products, including gadget insurance, pet insurance, wedding insurance, and electric bike insurance. Throughout his career, Mulligan has been recognised for his entrepreneurial approach, strong sales instinct and a focus on innovation in consumer insurance. Kieran, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I hope I got everything in there.
You did.
Right. I'm going to ask a very simple one to start off with. Are you an accidental or an on-purpose entrepreneur?
Good question. I would say on purpose because when I decided to set up my own business, I wanted to be my own boss.
Okay.
So I think, you know, in 2003, when I set up Blue, I had decided within a year earlier that, look, I'm going to be my own boss. I want to do it because I'd worked with people and, you know, and I'd done well working for people. Mm-hmm. So I'd worked with Kinlan Insurances and I had set up a travel division in there called KMT that was dealing with the travel trade. But ultimately I decided I wanted to be my own boss, and Rowan actually had knocked on my door a few times asking, would we set up together? Cause we would have been the leader at the time. And Rowan would have been Galway with a smaller business. So probably after the third time of knocking, I was ready to go myself. So yeah, we set it up. And so yes, purposeful entrepreneur.
So why do you think, you know, and I ask this of a lot of people who are entrepreneurs, why do you think, you know, there's two kind of groups of people out there, the ones who are saying, I'm an entrepreneur and I need to find a business, or people who find a gap or a problem or a pinch point for somebody, develop a service that ultimately becomes a business. Where do you think you are on that?
Well, I never really considered myself an entrepreneur. I just wanted to set up the business and wanted to be successful with it. So really for me, it was, I was in the travel industry before with Kinlan KMT. I wanted to be my own boss. So I decided that, look, we're going to have to come up with something a little bit different. And what would be different? Color. Rather than a name, Hodgins, Percival, whatever, insurances, something simple and easy. And because we were going into travel and travel is associated with blue sky, blue sea, then blue is a colour and a load of people love the colour blue. And it's a simple name to remember. Mm. So that was the reason we came out with that. We came out with Blue Insurance. And then we had to adapt, you know, as we saw travel agents losing some business. And there's peaks and troughs for travel agents to lose business, then win it again when there's a crisis. And there seems to be a crisis every couple of years.
Yeah.
So everybody goes, oh, travel agents are going to start losing their business, you know. But they bounce back because every time there's a problem, they're the ones that look after people.
Yeah.
So in 2006 and 7, when we saw Aer Lingus.com and Ryanair.com coming up, we then had to come up with some other brands. So we decided Blue would be our brand for the agents and for the brokers. And then we come up with our own direct brands. So not to be in conflict. And there always is a little bit of conflict, but not too much. And I think we handled that very well. So at the time in 2007, we launched multitrip.com. We launched carhireaccess.ie and .com, cover my wedding insurance.ie, pet insurance.ie. So we got most of the domains we wanted. Mm. The ones that we didn't get was travel insurance.ie, a UK company had at the time. But we came out with multitrip.com. So we were looking after the travel agents, and we were also then dealing directly with the public when we saw some of their business slip at the time.
Why are you getting back into the insurance industry now?
I know, good question. Well, probably wouldn't have done it as much if I hadn't known the triplets were on their way. So it was late 23 when we were looking at starting it and getting it formed, etc. So it wasn't until 24 that we knew we had triplets. Myself and my husband Brian had triplets on the way. I looked at a few different options. I looked at maybe doing a travel agency in a specialist field. I looked at the coffee shop, and I actually looked at a coffee shop called Mac and Mully, which is my husband's surname, Mac and Mully, the two of us. Did all the branding, done a deal with Leonidas on the chocolates, etc., a bit like a butler's. And we wanted a key off our key shop, and the key shop was going to be South William Street, would have been the first key one. But when we start looking at the key money that they wanted, that you never got back, and everything else, and just there wasn't the right premise. And then people that I knew in the hospitality industry in cafes said, "You are mad to come into this," and probably the best decision at that time. But I won't rule it out for into the future that if costs start to come back down and things get a bit easier, that we may enter that market again at some point. Maybe too late with Leonidas, but we'll see. So, yeah, I looked at a number of different options. I've invested in a number of companies. But I decided, look, actually, it was myself and Brian. We were in Melbourne and we were walking along St. Kilda. And I saw a sign in the window where Optus Mobile had a campaign called Yes. You know, and they had the exclamation mark and all that, or the speech bubble in it. And I went, I really like that. And it's a very positive name. So I immediately went onto Irish Domains and went, Yes Insurance, available, Yes. UK one was looking like it was available at the time. And I said, right, okay, this is good. I like this. Went back to my designers, had to come up with a couple of different ideas. And yeah, formed the company and brought some people over that worked with me in Blue. Brought in some new people that I hadn't worked with before. And I got some, I wouldn't be overly techie. I know bits, but I wouldn't. So Bobby Healy from Mana interviewed a few people for me on the tech side and recommended.
We've had Bobby Healy on the show.
Yeah. Actually, he was on the entrepreneur trip with me last week in Toronto. He's a finalist this year in the EY. So I brought in a mix of people. Didn't want to bring everybody from before. And I think that was important to get a mix of people in.
If you go back to 2003, when you set up Blue Insurance, you were, let's classify you as a disruptor to the insurance market at that stage, right? And you fast forward 23 years later, are you surprised there's still a space for a disruptor in a way?
I wouldn't say we were a disruptor when we first launched, because when we first launched, we wanted to provide an online platform for travel agents to book insurance. Okay. Where before they were writing pads and triplicate, and then they take one, they keep one, and so on. So it was important for us to come out with an online solution. The evolution of the business came about as a result of changes in the business environment, in the economy. Mm. So we're always very innovative. We always try to be one of the first out with new products and new ideas. So, like, for example, in 2007-08, Budget Travel collapsed. Never should have collapsed. So they had a new owner that had an airline. And because he had an airline, the Commission for Aviation Regulation at the time wanted an open-ended bond, where normally a bond would be about 10% that they an owner would put up for a tour operating business. They wanted an open-ended bond. The owner said, "I'm not giving you an open-ended bond." And the business collapsed. And that was a very profitable business that should never have collapsed at the time. I think even the liquidator says, this is crazy, this business shouldn't have collapsed. So as a result of that, and then the economic crisis coming in, we started seeing a slip in business from the trade and from others. And we said, we need to look at this. We need to adapt. So we had come out with our, VHI would have launched their annual travel insurance around that time or a little bit earlier. We were encouraging the agents to book annuals. So we decided, look, we need to adopt this and take control of this ourselves. So let's go out and be competitive in the market. And I think when we launched multitrip.com, we were going out for about $19.99, where some of the banks were $149 and $99 for an annual policy. So we really brought in, got competitive. We were one of the first that there with an online solution. And we also then launched, we could see what things were happening with the environment and with the economic crisis. And we could see that a lot of young people would be emigrating because the jobs were going and business were closing. So we launched backpackertravelinsurance.ie and .com for the UK market. And as a result, even though we lost a 2 million book, such as Budget Travel, we made the commission back on the business that we generated from the backpacker travel insurance, people emigrating. So we were always changing and adapting. We were probably the first out there with gadget insurance. So we registered gadgetinsurance.ie.com. You could see the iPhones was just starting at that time, laptops, etc. So again, we were first out there. And a lot of things such as car hire access, you know, where you now see a lot of people dynamic packaging together their flights and hotels and car hire and all that, you know, that movement hadn't started really with the tour operators. It was about to start. And we registered car hire access back that time. But, you know, look, go forward a few years later and we were starting to see big volume coming in on that. So we were ahead of the big players in Ireland, the big insurers, because a lot of them followed us afterwards and tried to get into that market. But we had established a good gain at that point and a good branding. So it worked out well for us.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, what are your plans for the new business now, and how does it fit into the landscape that has moved on a lot because of you guys the first time round?
Yeah, I don't see it moving on too much.
Okay,
there's a bit of embedded products such as sort of airport delay, and you can go to the lounge or get a payment and stuff like that. But it really hasn't moved on that much. What there has been a lot of consolidation in the insurance market. Mm-hmm. A lot of the UK companies have come in and swallowed up, you know, various different brokers in the market, such as Chill and Insure My Van. And there's been a lot of consolidation there. Arrakis would have been behind a lot of that as well. But as to them advancing anywhere, I haven't seen that major advancement that I thought I probably would have seen. Now, we're bringing AI into some of our products. So say, for example, with the car hire access, you'll be able to take a video of your car and AI will point out all the dings and dents and will store it for you on, and will be able to, so that you won't get screwed at the car rental. That's which everybody knows.
Yeah.
You go and rent a car, they tell you there's no scratches on it. Go outside and there's about 20 on it.
It's like
And then when you come back with it, if you drop your keys in early in the morning and they're not opened, all of a sudden they find some more dings and dents on it or underneath it that you wouldn't have seen in the first place. So that type of stuff we're conscious of. But we're trying to be different. We're going to be the first in the market on the niche insurance side that will offer no claims bonus. So we'll offer no claims bonus on your travel insurance policy, your car hire access, your gadget, all the different products that we're going to be rolling out. And that's a bit different because that's rewarding loyalty. So we're going to be rewarding loyalty. And we're saying if you're an existing customer of ours, unless there's some promotion at that time, then you will get your policy cheaper than what a new business customer will get it for, which is rare in the insurance industry. Normally, you move to a car insurer, they'll give you a discount for the first year with them, and then the following year, you start seeing your premiums go up and up and up. So it's a bit like they tell you when you're 25. Oh, yeah, when you get to 35, your premium will get cheaper and you'll be...
And then
when
you get to 35, it's moved to 40.
Yeah, the market's gone, whatever it is, you'll never get there. So, yeah, so that makes us a bit different from the others. Online platform customer services is centric to us and looking after customers. And I think the brand Yes Insurance, we want to say yes when you're making your claims and you're looking after customers. And the way we do it is that every staff member in our business is to treat a customer like they're a family member. And are they being treated fairly? And if they're not being treated fairly, then we stand up for them. Mm-hmm. And that's very important to us.
As you set up this second business, What are the learnings that you've taken from the first time you set up the business?
Well, this time I've gone with a senior team straight away. And that was to make us move quicker. Whether we move quicker, I don't know. But I think we also, from day one, we did a 4-day working week.
Okay.
So I wanted the culture and I also wanted the staff to have that enjoyment of having those 3 days, 3 full days off. If I look back on it now, I'd say probably a mistake for a startup. I'd say yes, if you're an established business and you're up and you're running and you're very profitable at that time, then you can move to a 4-day and you get the staff to stretch that bit of time on the 4-day. But as a startup, no, you need your 5 days and you need to be driving it fast and quickly.
And then, you know, when you look at it then in terms of, you know, being a customer service focused organization, square that circle with a 4-day week because people don't have claims only just 4 days a week.
No. Well, our call center team would be in at different days. So might be in Tuesday to Friday or whatever. So the key management would be 4 days and some of them would be Tuesday to Friday. You know, we'll open on Saturdays as well. So we'll have people on at different times. But it was 4 days. We would probably be looking at new staff coming in, etc. And possibly some existing staff moving to 5 days.
All right. Okay. As a broader question, what's your take on the insurance industry right now in Ireland?
Premiums going up. A lot of consolidation, as I said. Starting to see some UK players come into the market that wouldn't have been in before. And I know when we registered a domain when we were in Blue Insurance and it was one of the competitors in the UK, but it was a .ie. They went after it then at that point. But they never really entered, those big comparison engines never really entered the Irish market because they kind of felt it was too small. The numbers in Ireland was equivalent to maybe Manchester or Birmingham or something. So they weren't going to be pumping it in. The market changing, with the consolidation, you're really seeing the leading insurers still at the forefront. You're not seeing, apart from Chill, you're not seeing the brokers really out there. I'm not seeing brokers challenging as much like what we would have done back in the day. Challenging the pricing and challenging the innovativeness of insurance products. I'm not seeing any innovation really happening in the insurance industry at the moment, which I thought.
And do you think
stage,
that's the underwriter's fault, or do you think it's the brokers and the channel's fault for not pushing for more?
I think it's both.
Right.
I think possibly that they're struggling. Like we had a 2-year multi-trip, we did 2-year car and home. Like we did research and this was back starting in 14. We were doing the research and we launched it in 15. And the behavior and attitudes research at the time was saying 77% of people would love to have a 2-year policy. They don't want to renew every year. And if they can get a saving by committing to you for 2 years, well, then that was important for us. So that's something we will be looking at as we go along. But we wanted to get the annual travel insurance. Again, like we've annual travel insurance, a European annual policy for $14.99. So it's very competitive. And that's something I still don't get with the market. I don't get with the consumers out there why you wouldn't spend 15 quid on a policy for a year to protect you. Like Spanish medical costs are quite easy. You could have a £250,000-£300,000 claim. They're nearly as high as the States. So, you know, these people that are ended up relying on a GoFundMe now, and unfortunately they're in a difficult situation and family, and they have to start campaigns to pay for costs. But for the sake of one cocktail, you know, an annual policy for the year, people are mad not to buy travel insurance when they're going abroad.
Yeah. I don't know what the block is. I would always have had it, and it's just it. You know, you just do it and you know, particularly if you're going to be traveling more than once in a year.
Yeah, look, I mean, even the cancellation aspect alone, you're spending 500-600 on a weekend break. You'd be probably spending a minimum of 1,500 on a holiday for yourself. So for the sake of 15 quid for the year, and that'll cover loads of different things.
It won't even get you fast track in the airport.
I know. Well, if it was me and I was the government, I'd be insisting that everybody that travels, because the amount of times that they have to handle cases abroad because nobody has insurance as well. I'd be putting it as a compulsory thing, but then that'll benefit me. So they'd be knocking me for saying that anyway.
Yeah, probably. Come back to the idea of the entrepreneurship for start. You know, when you think about when you set up the business back in the early 2000s, but also then maybe when other people that you've talked to or other startups that you worked at, right? Do you think it's a major mistake that entrepreneurs make that when they start a business, they think they need to be really good at all the different hats that the entrepreneur has to wear to set up the business, or and try to do it on their own? Now, you had a partner, right, when you set up the business. But do you think an awful lot of people go and flog themselves to death and never actually optimize the situation?
Possibly. Yes, that does happen. You know what happens out there. Like for when we set up Blue, I was at the sales end, the marketing, the design, all that stuff. And Rowan was in accounts and compliance back then. So that's what he liked.
Yeah.
I was out selling the whole time, marketing and so on. And yes, look, I mean, even for me in my days, like, I mean, micromanage, sometimes you do that until the point where your business, you realize, actually, I shouldn't be micromanaging. So we did leadership course, management for growth course with Enterprise Ireland. And yes, I think it was around 2013, 14, that I went, right, I'm in the middle of floor, I need to stop being in the middle of floor. And we probably would have had about 50 or 60 people at that time. And because I could hear what's going on up in the call center, and I'd be like, what's happening up there? Is there a problem? I want to know about it. Yeah. I was on social. I could see if anything was coming in on social. And luckily, like we didn't have many complaints because we were very focused on the customer and looking after the customer. But then I'd hear IT down one end and so on. So at a point, an entrepreneur is good at coming up with ideas. They're normally innovative. But at a certain point, then you need to pass it to your team. You're bringing in people that are good. Or in our case, and we're very lucky, we would have people that started off in our call center, you know, maybe at 17 or 18 or 19 or whatever. And some of those people were managing the business when I was leaving. So we had Pamela, who would have been in our call center, end up being our head of compliance. Maeve, who would have been in the call center, did marketing with me, and then she became a director. And then when I left, Maeve became CEO. And when Maeve left there, then Jason, who was also in the call center, spotty teenager when he was starting up, and he's now CEO. So we brought a lot of people through the business and would have known the business from the time of answering the calls all the way through. Mm. And I think that was important. But I do think CEOs, yes, some CEOs do need to delegate. They need to step back and look at the overall picture and manage the overall picture, but let the teams manage. But it is a fault of a lot of entrepreneurs. And you find a lot of times where investment comes into a business, you see the CEO be moved out, go into a chairman role or whatever, and then, you know, until the point where they sell or whatever, goes on. But yes, sometimes some don't do it, and then they probably, if they're micromanaging the business, probably won't grow as fast as they should.
You mentioned about staff and things like that. Are you a hire talent or develop from within?
My preference is to develop from within.
Okay.
And give the people that start off that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So even now at the moment, we've taken some people in our call center and we're asking, we've said to the management, let's try and bring somebody along. If anybody's shown any spark, let's move them along and possibly move them out into a better position or a different position within the business, or support another element of the business. So sometimes you have to bring in the talent. You know, that's very important as well, because you're not going to have it, especially with new young people coming in. But certainly as a business grows, if you can, you know, promote from within, then I would do that. Mm-hmm.
How will the cultures differ between what Blue was and what Yes is going to be?
The culture will be similar, right, because the culture was very good back then.
Okay.
We were very profitable from day one in Blue because there was only three of us that, you know, myself, Rowan and Diane opened the doors.
Yeah.
Where this time I have a lot of senior management in. So more Chiefs than Indians at the moment. So that was a decision I made at the time. So, but the culture is there. Equality, there's no airs and graces. We look after everybody, and I'll make the tea just as much as someone else will make the tea. And we're looking at the whole sustainability side of things. And we haven't got it right yet, but I think we'll be looking at sort of digitizing where we can everything and get rid of, you know, things that will impact the environment, etc., and so on.
Okay. On that, in terms of staff and hiring staff and things like that, you know, where are you in terms of the you know, you get somebody and they're the best at what they do, but there's collateral damage that they leave in their wake in terms of, I refer to it as, you know, what happens when you hire a talented asshole? what do you do? And you obviously try to avoid hiring him in the first place. But
for me, it's you say goodbye.
Straight away?
Pretty much.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's important. I think you need to have employees that can work together as a team. And one person disrupting, or two people disrupting that team and causing chaos and anarchy in the business, is not good for the business. Mm-hmm. And nobody is irreplaceable, including myself, you know. So I always say that if someone is there and they're not the right fit, then you need to get them out.
Yeah.
Because it will ruin your business. And what will happen is, if you don't get the people out that are causing anarchy, and you need to review the circumstances, you need to review everything. But if you don't get them out, then you'll have some other good people that don't cause anarchy that will go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's very important in the business.
Customers are great at telling you what's wrong with a product or a service, but not necessarily telling you how to fix the problem, right? What do you do with customer feedback?
Well, as I say, like before, I would have been all over the social media pages. So, you know, if something wasn't right, I would know about it instantly, because I'd be sitting on my couch and I'd go off, you know, Blue Insurance or Multicrypt.com, social, Facebook, whatever, Instagram, whatever, would click off and I'd see it. So I would have been all over it. So, you know, a customer's complaint is to help you improve your business. Mm. That's how I see it. So, so unless it's something that the consumer is really, really wrong on, has just been totally obnoxious, and you always get one or two of them.
Yeah.
But I see a customer's complaint as something of how we can improve our business. Mm.
Then do you obsess about the small things in the business?
Depends on what the small thing is. Yeah, sometimes. Like, I'm a bit of ADHD and OCD. So my husband at home would say, would you stop? And I say, you never see the dirt or whatever. And he'd be like, leave me alone. So yes, I probably would obsess about small things, because I want things to be right. I want the brand image to be right. I want everything to be right that you put out there.
Mm.
So I would obsess a little bit. And I'm sure my senior management would tell me, yes, you obsess about loads. So, but for me, I want customer service to be second to none. I want our branding to be second to everything. I just want it to be right.
Yeah.
For me, there's no excuse that anything should be wrong.
Yeah, that's in your control.
That's in my control.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm managing director, so I'm not there all the time. I have a CEO and a senior team. So for me, I'd expect things to be done right.
Mm.
You know, and if not, then, you know, I'd question it.
And then in from that perspective, then what do you think is the hardest part of the job as the managing director, as opposed to the CEO?
The hands-on that I would have been doing before.
Right.
That I, like, as I said, in 14, 15, I had to step back and delegate. And that's what I'm doing now. Right. I'll be stepping back a little bit, leaving it to the team, but I'll be keeping a close eye to make sure that, you know, it's been done right. But my trust is in them to deliver. And I've really good, Shane Kinahan's our CEO, Greg Bammer's CTO. Greg is new. We wouldn't have worked with Greg before. Shane, I would have worked with. Damien is our CFO. And then we brought in Elaine Marr, who is just brilliant head of compliance. She takes notes. She's from Carlow. She'd beat us up if we do anything wrong. So
most head of compliance do, trust
yeah,
me.
Yeah, well, this lady now, you don't mess with. So, yeah, no, but we've a really good team there, and they're on top of it and making sure everything is done right.
And you were like, if you look back at the Blue, you mentioned earlier on that as the market changed, you needed to be get there and innovative in terms of the products and things like that. But is there a risk that the bigger you get, that kind of desire to be innovative kind of just wanes a little bit?
Never did.
Never did.
No. Even when we were at the height and when we were selling, we had a turnover about 50 million.
Hmm.
We were always trying to be innovative. Like the 2 year 2-year car and home was innovative. Then we came out with the 2-year sort of multi-trip at the time. And even now we're innovative. But what we're seeing now is we're seeing a lot of partnerships,
okay,
as well as our direct. So we've just launched the travel trade in Ireland as well. They're going to be booking our policies. So people, you can get your insurance, Yes Insurance, from the travel industry as well as our direct site. But we're also like, nobody knew about us, but yet we're the number one provider of gadget insurance in Ireland.
Okay.
So we've worked with a company called Riggle. We brought on some more companies as well. And so we're every student that is getting an iPad in school or a laptop or whatever in school, we're insuring that through our partners.
Okay.
And we're number one in that. And we're going to use that format to go into Northern Ireland and into the UK as well and grow it over there as well. So during the year, we bought a UK broker, a very small broker. It was a company that was doing pet insurance. They had tracker devices. So we got involved with them. And we bought that broker, and now we're rolling that pet insurance out further in the UK with travel and other products as well. And we're going to be tying up with partnerships over there too.
Mm-hmm. And then, where's the line that innovation becomes a distraction? If you know what I mean, that you go into areas they could have been something there, but really we should have known that there wasn't.
I think you have to weigh up the value of that innovative idea.
Yeah.
And some of it will come via AI, such as the car rental when you're going to do that. So that's coming. That's coming shortly. But I think, like, for example, I was sitting in a meeting. We'd launched out to the travel trade and all of a sudden, we've 3 levels of covers, and our top cover, which is Ultra Cover on the travel insurance, gives you 3 covers. It was giving you winter sports, it was giving you trip disruption, and it was giving you excess waiver, so 0 excess on a claim. And then I was just sitting in a meeting thinking, what about these people that don't go skiing? Now, it's not very innovative, but it's a different idea than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So now what we're doing is we're going to give you trip disruption, we're going to give you excess waiver, and now you have a choice of your 3rd cover, and you can pick it depending on what suits your needs, which is, again, looking after the customer, what the customer wants. So if the customer doesn't ski, then the customer can pick Cruise Connection cover to add in as their 3rd cover, free cover. Or if they're bringing all the kids tablets or whatever, they can add in gadget cover into the 3rd cover.
Okay.
So again, maybe not super innovative, but also something that is different from everybody else in the market. And then the no claims bonus, which the customers will get in the event of no claims, which a lot of people don't claim on their travel insurance, then they'll get the discount coming up.
Do you think there's a point where, you take that to the next level and you go, to the customer, here's your menu. You can pick 3 covers. You can pick 5 covers. You can pick 7 covers. And they'll just click a box and go, I want this, this and this for my one, and that suits me. And then it might be my husband or my wife, they do ski, so actually they want ski cover, but I don't want ski cover. And you just start getting this kind of a la carte.
There is that. The rating structure behind it gets quite difficult for underwriters. So we tried to simplify it that you've got light, which is your basic standard. Mm. You've got smart, which is your medium cover. And then our ultra, which is our higher cover, which gives you basically all singing, all dancing. Mm-hmm. And we also, within what we've done different from others out there in the market now, is we built the medical screening journey within the booking process.
Okay.
So we're before with multitrip.com or with Blue, where you would have got your policy, but if you had a medical screening, you had to go ring a third party company and declare your condition. Now you can do it within the booking flow with us.
Okay.
And someone that doesn't do it online can still ring us and can still accommodate that. So making life easier for the customer, really.
As you look at Yes Insurance going forward, is it going to be much more of an organic growth story or organic and acquired?
It could be both.
Right.
We're looking at all options.
Okay.
Because we want to build it and build it fast. And, we've got a couple of different layers that were coming. So this element will be the brokerage side of the business. And it'll be in Ireland, being the UK. Then we also want to look at possibly bringing that brokerage side into underdeveloped countries in the EU. And then we're looking possibly at a new phase, which is a comparison engine for Ireland and for EU countries that are underdeveloped. I think the UK market is saturated, so we probably won't go in there with a comparison engine, but certainly it's an option for others. And there isn't really a proper comparison engine in Ireland. I mean, you've got Bonkers and you've got Switch or whatever, switcher.ie, but it's not a proper comparison engine because the insurers don't want to go onto it. But we have a really clever idea that we'll be coming out with that we think under insurers in Ireland will want to join our comparison engine when we go to do it.
And what is the landscape in say even developed Europe like for the product set that you've got?
It would be easy enough.
Okay.
You know, we've just won a really big tender. Can't say what it is at the moment, but a very large, very respectable Irish insurer. Some products we may not release directly ourselves, but we will do them with partnerships. But what we do have, the gadget, the travel, the pet, the, you know, car hire access and all the other bit, bike, we'll be doing electric bikes and everything as well. That would suit and makes it, because it's very easy to distribute online, that we would be able to roll that out into Spain, Portugal, other countries as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just getting the right market at the right time.
Okay. Two questions, I suppose, around the board and investors and things like that. That how do you manage your board and investors when things aren't going right?
I am the investor. So when things are not going right, I get louder. I'm the investor in the business.
Right.
So, my focus is on turning this to profit.
Okay.
It will take probably another year or two, I'd say. But
and was that the same in Blue? Was it just
no,
you and
Blue? No, Blue because we were... Myself and Ron took a very small salary at the time, and then we had somebody in the call centre. It grew naturally.
Okay.
We had an overdraft, I think, of 25 quid from Ulster Bank at the time. And we never banked with them, so I don't know how we got it, but we never had to use it. So we made profit every year from we opened back with Blue. So this is slightly different, but that's the way things go. So, what was that question again you were asking me?
It was about the managing the board when things don't go wrong.
Yeah, as I say, I have some experienced people around us. We have a number of directors, and then we'll have some outside people giving their views and opinions on it as well. So, there will be challenging times, you know, but everybody is focused on this business has to make profit and has to be run well, and we have to look after the customers.
Going back to the Blue one, and what was the motive to sell the business?
Sorry, just having a drink. I was tired.
Okay.
I just kind of felt, and even though I was the majority shareholder in Blue when we went to sell it, I still, Maeve and Dave, my IT director, and Maeve, my director of operations, they had shareholding in the business, small shareholding in the business. I still wanted, even though I had the majority, I still wanted their decision as well. It was going to be a decision by the three of us. Mm. So we sat down, we had a chat, and said, what do you think? And I think everybody at this time, you know, I've been going since 2003, I think. What was it? Probably September 2003 or thereabouts. So time was right. And luckily for us, we had about five or six companies chasing us. A lot of VCs, but they wanted me to stay on longer and I wasn't willing to do that at the time. And then we two from the insurance industry in Covermore, who were owned by Zurich, was one. They're from Australia. And we made a decision to run with them at the time.
And in terms of, like, you know, were you lucky in that regard? Like, sometimes the idea is, you know, you might want to sell the business, but nobody might want to buy it at the time. Were you lucky that there was a, in terms of the timing of it, that there was interest out there?
We approached four companies to look at doing that tender and doing the, in the end we ran with IBI, and they came back with some figures for us and I went, nope, I'm going to hire than that. So off they went again and came back. So yeah, we were lucky, but the multiplier since had jumped like it was 10 times, nearly 15 times, and there's like, it jumps around. So, you know, we had a lot of interest. As I said, the VCs were very interested, but they wanted me to stay on longer and put 50% back in and stuff like that. And I just didn't want to do that at the time. So,
And then when it came to choosing the suitor in terms of the final decision, how much of a consideration, because obviously there's two parts of it. There's one, and you know, when we look at M&A transactions, oftentimes we look at it from the acquirer's perspective and not the acquired perspective, right?
Yeah.
So how important was it, the idea that, like, you'd build a business with a lot of people that you knew, that, you know, up until a couple of weeks earlier, you were sitting in the middle of the floor, that they were going to a good home, if you know what I mean.
And that was important for us as well, because and we looked after staff as well. So that was very important to me, that as well as, you know, the shareholders, that the staff got looked after too. So that was important. But yes, I think for us, we were happy with Covermore at the time. They were part of the Zurich group, and we kind of felt this was the right fit for everything.
Do you regret selling it?
No.
And yet you're back into the industry.
I know, and they're probably cursing me out of it now at this stage. But no, I didn't regret it. And I had a 2-year earn out. And so I finished up in the middle of COVID.
Okay.
So, you know, 6 months before the earn out was due to finish up, we were 28% ahead, and then COVID came along and slam, 13th of March, everything shut down. I was out in airways and telling everyone to get trip disruption and all sorts of cover before it kicked in. And look, we big sales, but luckily for us, that during the time when travel stopped, we were innovative again, offering people 3 months free cover on their annual policy to keep it going, which they did, and car hire access. And then we had Gadget, and everybody was getting laptops to work from home and everything. So that really took off. And then pet insurance, everybody was getting pets. So that, again, so even when the company that bought us had very little income coming in over in Australia, because they were dealing with travel agents and airlines, we were still able to give dividends back as well at that time. So, look, I mean, if I had left it 12 months later or whatever, 18 months later, I might have been able to sell the business at that time. So the things are always, you're always destined. I never look back and regret anything that I do. But I did feel the time was right. And I enjoyed the break from it. So, you know, we moved house. Northside are moving over to the south side.
Sell out.
keeping it real for the people on the south side.
All right. Okay. I'll give you that.
It was just the right time. There's different things happening, and I was able to invest. I started focusing on stocks and shares and stuff like that, and that had come well for me, so I won't complain. But it gave me that opportunity to do other stuff as well at the time, and then, you know, enough holidays, and then, hey, I was looking at different. I've invested in other companies, I just kind of felt it was right. Looked at the coffee, looked at the other bits and pieces, and said, "No, this, go back into this."
What do you think is the hardest part of the job, being the boss?
Hardest part is when things are not going right that you have to call it out. And I remember saying this to Maeve in Blue, and Maeve's my head of operations director in the business. I said to Maeve, employees are not your friends. You may be friendly with them, you may go for drinks with them, but when the first time you say no to them, that's when you'll realize they're not your friend, because
it's transactional.
Yeah, it is. And look, go for pints, go for whatever, go out for lunches, but your friends are your people at home outside of the business that you can rely on day to day. And if you say no to them, they're not going to stop being your friend. But if you're in business and somebody wants to go on a holiday, or they've already booked and said, look, I'm going to take this, and you say, no, you can't because we've this, then they're no longer your friend. Mm-hmm. So that's important.
Mm-hmm. And then in the same vein, I suppose, what do you think is, what personal characteristics are most important to have as the boss?
Modesty, I think, is important. I think a boss that's going around and, can't associate with the staff and can't have the staff are nervous to go up to and can't talk to. And I don't think that's good for a business. Now, probably my current staff, I'm only like in there a few mornings a week. So, But I would want all our staff to be able to talk to anyone in the senior team in the business. And I think if you have somebody in the business, and I'd seen it in Blue, and I had to correct some people in Blue going, you're going around there like you're John Wayne, you're going around the place and like you're the big man. That's not how it works in this business. And I pulled people in, just like I've also pulled in where you might have had a couple of girls in the business. Mm. So in Blue, there was this bitchiness going on with new people coming in, and I stopped that in its tracks straight away, because that's not a good quality to have in the business. And I said to people, if that's how you're going to operate, you're not welcome in this business.
Yeah. Who have you, or who do you seek advice from?
Well, Maeve would be one that I would talk to a bit, who was my former director, and I think she's very good. And she was CEO of Blue after I left. A lot of people from the EY group,
right,
the Entrepreneur of the Year program. So we were finalists in 2011. So we're alumni now. So every year you can go on the trip. And I hadn't done it in a few years, but I'd gone this year. And just some great advice.
And we've had a few people from that are various different years that have been that.
And it's not a club you can pay to get into. No. You have to earn it. And once you're in there, and that again is like, you've amazing entrepreneurs in there, from Dennis O'Brien all the way through, you know, like this year, Amy Connolly was there with Sculpted. She was doing a speech this year. So very impressive as well. All the way through, like, there's so many entrepreneurs, Vox Pro and everybody, Dan Kiley and all that from there. But everybody is very humble and modest. And it's like a quality you need as a CEO in your business. Mm. You also have that with a lot of entrepreneurs. It's very few, one or two, but very few that you would go, they're really nice people and you'd be easy to talk to and get advice from. And that's what I do as well. If you need advice.
Do you hate losing or love winning?
Both. I hate losing. And to be fair, we lost very few clients in the 18 years in Blue Insurance. Very few. I love winning. And do you know something? I love when you come out with a new idea and it goes live. And that could be a radio ad. It could be TV campaign. Even winning a deal.
Mm.
Whether it's marketing deal. Like, we're very lean. We've always been very lean. So I remember Maeve coming in going, look at that bowl of fruit. We have this bowl of fruit. This is a new thing we're doing for the staff every week. And, you know, this is the prize. And I said, that's the prize of it. I'd be like, can we get double that for next week? So same with marketing deals. Ian would have came back and said to me, Ian Kennedy would have came back and said, oh, we got a deal. And, you know, it's a great deal. And I go back to him and say, no, let's go back and get 20% off that. And we did generally. We normally did. So I think that's very important.
And do you celebrate your wins?
Yes, we do celebrate our wins. You have to celebrate your wins.
It's amazing the amount of people I ask that question to say no. They have a view of, oh yeah, it's been great, Jay, but
you have to celebrate it with your staff because the staff have to know about it.
Okay.
And one of the things we did in Blue from the very first year that I opened is we did a Christmas party abroad every year. So we started in London, then in Paris. At one point, we ended up going to Vegas and New York with the senior team. Because one year in Paris, the staff took the mic and they didn't even show up for some things. And I went, you know what? Back to Dublin now. Yeah. You learn your lesson. And we took the senior team then. But I think that's part of the mix and of the culture is for them to enjoy it. And they get to know you a bit better when you're in a social environment.
Yeah.
And that's very important in any business. Anybody in sales, I would not take on anyone in sales that cannot be good socially, because that's how you win deals.
Mm. People do business with people.
And you see it in the travel industry a lot. You see a lot of people who are in the sales position in the travel industry that go and can socialize, can have a pint or have a few, but don't embarrass themselves, don't fall over the place or don't, you know, whatever goes on in the industry. That is so important. And I think that's important in anybody in a sales position.
What mistake did you learn most from and how did you apply it?
Better research on stuff. But you know what? You have to make mistakes in business. I don't think anyone can go around and say, when we launched into the UK market, we spent about 400 grand on marketing in the underground and buses in Manchester. And it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to spend millions in the UK. But we learned that lesson. And you have to, sometimes we had the money to be able to do it, but then you realize, okay, the way I distribute in the UK market is I go in the aggregators. I have to pay a lot of commission, but I get the renewal the following year. And even though I have to pay that commission, I'm getting a guaranteed policy. Mm. And that's how, and it's a bit like that in Australia as well. We went into Australia. We launched multitrip.com.au in Australia. The first time we did it, we did sort of some trams in Melbourne and some stuff in the airport in Sydney. And again, media is so expensive over there. So we realized, get on the aggregators instead in Australia.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to decision making, are you fast or slow?
Fast. And generally, I go with my gut.
Okay, guys, that's the second bit. Database or gut feel?
Yeah, gut. And gut is probably about 90% right. Maybe higher.
And then, has fear of failure ever been a driving force for you?
No. But I wouldn't want to have failure either.
Okay.
I would keep driving it until I turned it around if there was failure.
Okay. I suppose when you think about it and you think about the business, right? How important have personal experiences been to you developing your management style?
Good question. Personal experiences. Well, I think inclusivity and equality was very important.
Okay.
I was asked recently, you know, it was Laura in the Sunday Business Club asked me, oh, did you get involved in, like, obviously we've gone through a surrogacy journey. We're a gay couple. Did you get involved? And I said, not really. But actually, what I forgot about was we were the only company in 2015 that marketed on Dublin Bus, because that's the only distribution that we could go out there supporting Yes Equality for the marriage equality. Okay. So we took, there was a little risk there that, you know, the super conservatives may not book with us if we were out there promoting Yes Insurance, but we decided we're going out there, and we had Marvin, our monkey, that from the multi-trip ads saying supporting Yes Equality, vote yes. But nobody else did that. And prior to that, within the year, I joined, somebody asked me would I join the, it was called Glen for the Gay Lesbian Employee Networks and whatever. And I went to a couple of meetings. And some of the big, what I was seeing from those meetings was the large US companies, multinationals that were on in the committee were saying, oh, we can say yes or no. We're not allowed. But as soon as the yes went through, oh, we're all behind it. So there's a bit of sort of like, you know,
authenticity, lacking in authenticity about it.
Yeah. And you saw them then in the pride marches going around with their balloons and you say, well, actually, you didn't support them in 2015 until you got the yes vote, where you should have been out there supporting equality back in the time.
But then we've almost seen it rolled the other way now because of the US administration who are going to be, and suddenly nobody wants to say they're for anything other than what it basically conservative is.
And that's very disappointing to see.
Yeah.
And you see the pandering that goes on because they're going to be making money by supporting Trump at the time, you know. And it could come in the UK. And I always say to people, you know, the marriage equality, you know, the surrogacy that we have in the country and the legislation still has to be passed, etc., which Jennifer McNeely is really getting on with at this stage. But I never take that for granted. Mm-hmm. And I say to my friends, I never take it for granted, because all it takes is a right-wing populist to get in, to say, I'm going to do this, this and this.
And suddenly,
and
bang.
Look what's happened in Poland. Look what's happened in Italy. Mm. Gay couples can't adopt, can't do surrogacy. You know, all it takes is a right-wing government to get in. So I'd be very conscious of that. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to actually run as a politician, but I wouldn't have the patience, I don't think.
Not the money in it,
no,
either.
Well, no, it's not really about the money. It's more about, I just can't understand, you know, how the government are not on top of things like pricing in this country and competition and everything. I think that really needs to be looked at, because we keep increasing minimum wages.
Mm.
Minimum wages in the hospitality industry is killing it, as well as all the other costs. And we keep increasing minimum wages because prices on everything keeps climbing.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is to do with competition.
But if you address the prices, you don't need to do the other.
Exactly.
Thing. Yeah.
Now, some people might, the government, something government probably argue, no, this is manufacturing that's caused it's COVID that's causing, but it's not. I mean, look at other countries that are out there, and they're able, like, the prices that we're paying here is ridiculous for consumer items and groceries.
Right. I'm going to open the black book.
Go on.
Start question now.
Better not be a difficult one.
Actually, it's... I've really looked out in this one, right?
Yeah.
Given your current, your recent change of status, all right, in terms of now being a father, right?
Yes.
So what one thing would you change in the world to give your kids a better future?
What one thing
would you change in the world to give the kids a better future?
The American government. That'd be one thing, I think. I think, you know, because... at the moment, the Republicans don't care about climate. They don't care about equality. They don't care. It's gone super conservative, everything. And I think that's a really bad quality out there that, you know, climate deniers, you know, everything that they represent at the moment. And I think, you know, when Americans come to Europe, they see that. And I think, you know, we need to get back on focusing for the future. Climate is one big thing. Equality, diversity, everything there. Respecting people. Mm-hmm. And what's happening in Gaza and happening in Lebanon is disgraceful as well. You know? And I think we probably all should be standing up a bit more for protecting everybody.
And what we believe in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't do it enough. And I don't do it enough. And we're all so busy in our lives, but we should be standing up for, you know, innocent people being killed around the world. And it's not good enough.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Kieran Mulligan. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks, and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.